What does innovation sound like? It sounds like the luxury of being in the moment with your customer, client, or patient. It sounds like having the right information right when you need it. It sounds like being at your best for your customers and your business. Thanks to Hyland's intelligent content solutions that improve digital processes, innovators everywhere are able to do their thing better, whatever that thing is. Now, who doesn't like the sound of that? Hyland, for innovators everywhere. Visit Hyland.com.
The Premier League on OTB.
Rashford takes it into Cavani! Edison Cavani wins it!
Exclusive Premier League live commentaries every Sunday. The very best expert analysis on your phone and for free. Download the OTB Sports app now.
All right, OTB Sports is back with another series of in-depth chats with some of the biggest names in Premier League and Irish football history. With behind-the-scenes access, we'll be chatting to some of the legendary names from the biggest clubs, and we'll meet the crucial people behind the scenes who make a Premier League club what it is. It's all in association with Cabri FC and their club partnerships. You can also check out CabriFC.com for updates on promotions and giveaways. Cabri, official snack partner of Chelsea Football Club. Delighted to be joined by a real trailblazer in Irish football. Lisa Fallon is with us. How are you keeping, Lisa?
I'm good, Nathan. How are you?
Very well. Lisa, currently head coach with Galway United, working down there with John Caulfield, and formerly game strategy and tactical analysis coach with the Chelsea women's team, working under Emma Hayes. What does a game strategy and tactical analysis coach do?
Literally, what it says on the tin, you analyse the opposition and tactically analyze what way they play and how we need to play and create the game strategies for how we're going to play and win games.
So there's a lot in that. You might talk us about your coaching journey, I guess, and how you got to this position, because I say you're a trailblazer. It's very unusual for there to be a female coach in a head coach position at a League of Ireland club, or obviously at a Premier League or Championship club over in England. When did you first start getting the interest in coaching?
It probably goes back, Nathan, to when I was 12. I remember watching a football program called The Manageress on Channel 4 back in 1989. And it was the first time I think I ever saw a female in football, and Sherry Lungi played Gabriella Benson, and she was the manager, appointed the manager of a second division team in England at that time. So that was the old first division and the old second division. So it would have been the equivalent of the championships. So that probably was, up until then, I just loved football. I was always on the sidelines with my granddad and my uncles. Football was very much alive in our house. And it probably came from there, if I'm honest. That's probably where the seeds were sown. But all the way through my teenage years into my 20s, 30s, I was always interested in it. Started coaching when I was actually 14. I helped out with an under 12 girls team locally in Lucan. And literally, it was just always there. So like I went to college over in England to study sports science and English in 95. Prior to that, I had done a football course, an association football and career management course in Coláiste Ida in Finglas. And I was the first girl to do that course as well. So it was always, always there. I always wanted to work in football, but I was never really sure, I suppose, as a girl, that there was a pathway. And inadvertently, radio broadcasting or sports reporting probably became the most obvious route for me to go in order to work in football. And that's the route I went. And then, as it turned out, I ended up getting to work in football as an analyst as a result of interviewing people as part of my job as a sports reporter. So it was almost a full circle type of thing. But then I suppose my first analysis role was probably with, I worked as a coach under John Caulfield back in 2012. Might have been earlier actually, with the Irish Men's University squad. Then worked with Cork City for six and a half years. Worked with Northern Ireland for Northern Ireland's men's national team for 6 years. And then just, I suppose, over the course of that period of time, I was doing my coaching badges. So I did my UEFA B, then my A, and then I progressed on to do my pro license. And during that time, then I would have been whilst I was working with Cork City in Northern Ireland, I was also coaching and managing in the Leinster Senior League. So it kind of, it all just progressed gradually and gradually. I wouldn't say I had a particular path or a map routed out. It just kind of one thing generally tended to happen after the next. And yeah. and that ultimately led to me getting the opportunity to go and work over at Chelsea in 2019, which was an incredible opportunity. And really it just, it's all kicked on from there.
That lack of a pathway that you talk about, you mentioned working in radio reporting, and back in a previous life, we used to work together on a regular basis at GAA matches at Croke Park. And as you say, you'd get talking to coaches after games and you'd be able to express your interest and your knowledge, and it sort of kicked on from there. That chance also isn't available to everyone. So did you feel there was a blockage for you as a woman in actually taking even the first steps onto a more professional coaching ladder?
Yeah, you know what? It's a really good question, because when I look back, it probably wasn't, because I ended up in roles, and once I was in a role, that role generally progressed into another one. So it was like, once I was like with Northern Ireland, I initially started in there making the team's motivational videos and filming training. And that evolved to cutting clips of training, doing live in-game analysis during the matches, and doing some opposition analysis. But it was once I was in that, when you're in the environment, your capacity to grow and develop or bring something new to it evolved. And it was the same at Cork City. So I would have started off as the opposition analyst, then I became the team analyst, then the head of football analysis, and then into a first team coaching role. But all the while I was still coaching and managing in the Leinster Senior League. So in tandem, I still had other coaching and management roles. So I suppose I've been really fortunate that once I got into a role, it evolved. And my career has generally followed that pathway. I suppose after the 6 years with Cork City in Northern Ireland, I felt I probably needed a change of environment and culture, and to work at a different level. And that's when the opportunity came up to go to Chelsea. And just prior to that, I also had the opportunity to work with the Dublin Senior Gaelic Footballers, which again gave me an insight into a really elite performing culture. High performers, where winning is paramount and driving success, that successful model, but learning to do it and learning how it was done in another code, and then being able to bring some of the stuff I had learned in the environments I had been, could they transfer to that environment? And then how could some of the things from that environment transfer into my sport, which is predominantly soccer? So from that perspective, it was very interesting. And then obviously when you go to Chelsea, you then have the opportunity to work at the highest level of the game, you know, in one of the biggest football clubs in the world. So that progression, like I say, it just generally tended to happen. And then as a result of that, I became a head coach in the Women's Championship in England, albeit being cut short due to the COVID crisis. And then the next step then is the head coach role in Galway United. So, and albeit that's different because it's a men's first team as opposed to a women's team in England. But generally, the standard in England in women's football is very high. I think people probably underestimate the standard that it's at. And, you know, it's probably at a par, if not, it's certainly the top level of the women's game in England, probably be a bit higher than the men's, the highest level right. of the men's game here.
In terms of that high performance element that you would have really witnessed at Jim Gavin in Dublin, and bringing what you learned there then over to Chelsea, was that a straightforward transition? Are there a lot of commonalities between, say, what an Emma Hayes is trying to do at Chelsea and what Jim Gavin was doing with Dublin?
Yeah, it's a really good question. And I think, you know, all managers who are in that environment, what Emma had at Chelsea was a mind-blowing, incredible culture that she built over, you know, a number of years, 8 years, I think it was. I have to say, like, what Emma has done for women's football, not just at Chelsea Football Club, but in the game in general, she has driven the standards of the game over there in an incredible way. Because certainly when I went in, I was surprised a little at the start about how advanced the game was and the resources, more so, that, you know, what was available and how, you know, what's available for the men's team is available for the women's team. and rightly so. And whilst there is disparity in wages, and people talk about equality, but I think it's more about equity. It's about having the opportunity to train full time like a male player, like a professional male player. It's about having the right resources, the right backroom team, you know, all the things that a man needs to progress and play at the highest level of the game and have a career. That was all in place at the women's team. And that's, I think, is something that, you know, what Emma's done there, she didn't only drive the standard at Chelsea. She, as a result of what she's delivered and done at Chelsea, that's rippled out and it's filtered across the whole women's football industry in England. And I think it's a real testament to her. So from that perspective, it was a brilliant environment to work in. And then also because of that close relationship between the men's and the women's teams and sometimes the sharing of facilities, there was crossover, there was opportunities to, you know, see things and learn from people and speak to people and gain that experience, I suppose, that any other environment wouldn't give you. And also the opportunity to work in it and see, you know, there is a mystique about that level of the game maybe at the start intimidated about the whole prospect of going in there and thinking, you know, will I have what it takes to deliver at that level? But I think it was really interesting and just being able to go in and being able to bring something new to the environment, a different lens, a different opinion, because that's what you're brought in for. And then also, you know, to work with all the different coaches and all the different members, because sometimes an environment can get stale, a successful environment. So it's really important to freshen it up and consistently bring new things, because the thing about high performance is what you did last season won't be good enough next season. You consistently have to evolve because times never get slower. Performances never get less. It's always better, better, better. And where are those margins for incremental improvement that make a high performer the difference? Like we've been watching at the Olympics and the Paralympics, and the difference between first and second place in two events yesterday was 0.01 seconds. Like they're the margins of error at the highest level of sport. And that for me was, you know, the opportunity to go into that type of environment and see it and feel it and live in it and be in it and work in it every day was incredible. And I really loved it.
And did you get a sense when you were at Chelsea and working with Emma Hayes that the way she has driven the change, whether that was by accident or design, whether it was, I'm coming in here and I want this team to be the best it will be, and it sort of naturally evolved as more interest was in the women's game and as Chelsea progressed? Or did you get the sense she went in and thought, actually, if the men are having this over here, well, we may not get quite that. I want as close to that as possible, and went knocking on the right doors and actually had to be quite forthright in getting what she wanted for that team?
Yeah, I think it's a bit of both, actually, because even speaking to some of the longer term staff that had been there certainly longer, I was a newbie in, but, you know, even speaking to them, they were saying the difference in 3, 4, 5 years had been incredible. That transition in terms of resources, in terms of the access to facilities, and in terms of the size of the staff that were, and the expertise in the staff around the team to help generate that on pitch performance. So that was certainly, and that again is comes down to what Emma did and how she drove that and how she justified it, and how she, you know, was pretty relentless about it, because she would have had to be, because she was changing a whole environment, not just, you know, a facility for a women's team. She was changing a whole environment because we were all based in Cobham. And I think it's a real testament to her. But with that was also that, you know, that demand that she has of winning and that aspiration. You know, she's made no secret about it. She wants to win the Champions League. They came very close this year, the closest they have done. But they lost in the final to Barcelona. But again, I know that that's something that drives her every day. And she is, you know, any top level manager or any top level head coach is driven by that. You know, and at a club like Chelsea, you know, it is about delivering trophies. It is about delivering titles. That is the demand of that club, and rightly so. So yeah, it is a bit of both. It was a two-stranded thing that she's achieved, both the access to the facilities and the resources for the team, but also at the same time delivering success on the pitch, which they have. You you have to have one to justify the other.
Mm. You're working as head coach at Galway United and John Caulfield is there as manager. We still, within the top ranks of English football, have never had a female manager. When you look at Emma Hayes, what's better for the women's game? Or maybe it's totally irrelevant that she is one individual and an outlier. Is it staying at Chelsea and driving those standards within Chelsea and within the WSL and within English football as a whole and raising all the boats? Or would it actually be Emma Hayes getting a job at a men's club and sort of breaking that glass ceiling once and for all?
Yeah, look, and I think, you know, she'd be perfectly primed for it if an opportunity came. But I think what's really important is to understand that the level that the women's team is at Chelsea is far higher than a lot of clubs in the men's game in terms of resources, facilities, teams and the whole environment. And I don't think Emma would give that up lightly. But what I also love about Emma is how driven she is and how passionate she is for the women's game. And that Emma doesn't see the women's game as being any less than the men's game, or that the men's game is in any way superior to the women's game. And that is brilliant. And that is so, so important, because it's very difficult to, you know, opportunities for women are so in football at the highest level, are there's not many of them, you know. And for Emma to be so passionate about the women's game and so consistently a driver of it, that she just doesn't see where she is being any less, or that moving into the men's game would be progression. And I love that attitude. I think it's so important, because the women's game is the fastest growing game in the world. There's massive resources going into it now. UEFA prize money for the Champions League is growing. The games are becoming so competitive now that there's proper investment in the development of the female athlete, because for decades, the women's game has always been benchmarked off the performance levels of men. So physiotherapy, GPS, loading, all that type of stuff, the tactical analysis of the game, the breakdown and the statistical data upon which you measure the Premier League and the Championship in men's players, that was the only benchmark. But what has happened in the last 2 to 3 years, particularly, and a couple of years before that, but certainly more in depth now, is that resourcing and that investigation of what is it that makes success in the women's game, how, and benchmarking female elite female players against elite female players, and that medical science, physiotherapy, the ways of treating the female body are different to treating the male body, because we're structurally different. So and huge amount of work gone into the whole area around the menstrual cycle and how that impacts on performance. That was something I hadn't seen until I went to Chelsea, was how valuable and important it is to factor that in. And when you do factor it in properly, how much of a difference it actually makes in terms of players' capacity to perform at their best week in, week out, and also in injury prevention. So from those capacity, from all those areas, it's been, you know, so, so important. And the game is developing at that level, and the women's game is only going to continue to grow. There are now proper careers, full-time professional careers and progressions available for females. And I think, you know, that is a really positive thing. It's only going to go one way, but we need people who believe in it to keep driving that. And maybe not necessarily look at the men's game as being the best option, but actually looking at what are the opportunities in the women's game and how can we drive it, and what kind of a legacy can we leave behind for the next generation of females that come through, be they players, coaches, board members, administrators, or just working in the backroom teams of football, never mind if it's men's or women's. But Emma is a really special character. And I think, you know, she'd be a huge asset to the men's or the women's game. But personally, I think she'll make more of a difference in the women's game. But somebody will have to do it at some point, and I wouldn't put it past her. But I hope she's not finished in the women's game first.
That's really interesting, the way you talk there about the different needs of, say, female sports people, because we were talking to Karen Carney as part of this series, and I was asking about the role of men's teams for the women's games, whether it's in terms of playing in their stadiums or facilities. And she was saying the importance of the women's team being just part of the club, that Chelsea is a men's team and Chelsea is a women's team. And I guess the next stage of that is actually that women's teams and female players have very different needs than the men's teams do. And it's not just a case of, well, the resource for here for the men's team is this, let's give that to the women's team. They need more specific resources tailored to actually what they need for themselves in terms of facilities, in terms of backup staff. Do you see that coming down the track, that actually the investment is there for that?
It already exists at the highest levels of the women's game in England, to be fair. WSL and championship level in England would certainly have a lot of that in place already. I think in Ireland, we have massive scope to develop. And I think, you know, we're probably a good bit behind where we need to be. And I think it's something that I'd like to see the progressing in the women's game here, is that we really get a really cohesive plan to develop the women's game, because we have some very, very good players in this country, and that, you know, we start to actually get the investment, but that clubs take ownership of the structure, and that there's a collective will to change this, the landscape of women's football in this country, how it is now, that we can change that over the next 5 to 10 years and really leave a legacy piece. That it's not just that we don't talk about women's football and men's football. We just talk about football, and it just depends then ultimately on who's actually playing.
When was the last time you worked in the women's game within Ireland?
I worked in the women's game back in 2011, so with Shamrock Rovers in the inaugural year of the Women's National League.
But would you be wary, Lisa, weirdly, of being pigeonholed if you went back working in the women's game as a woman working in the women's game, that actually it might be more difficult for you in a way to get jobs then in the men's game?
I don't look at it like that. At the moment, the men's game in Ireland is really the only place where there is full-time work available for a coach. And even at that, there's not really, you know, you have to have another job in order to work in the League of Ireland as a coach. So it's, I don't see it that way, because again, and it comes back to that mindset about how people look at the game. So people might see it, people might see working in the women's game as a step down. I don't see that. I really don't see that. I see right now I'm working in the men's game. And, you know, it's, for me, it's just about understanding the environment that you're in, how you work with the players and the environment and the culture of the club that you're with, and how you create the best environment for those players to succeed and ultimately to create winners, to create a team that wins football matches, because that's what we're here for. That's what my job is. Whether I'm in men's football or women's football, it's to create that, a team that can win football matches. So right now I'm in the men's game because that they're the only opportunities in Ireland for a female coach. The only opportunities to have a career is in the men's game. Now, I would love to see that change, because I think there is so much potential in the women's game in this country. And it's a little bit heartbreaking that the opportunities are not there. But I hope that over time, that, you know, with the appointments of the likes of Ruth Fahey at Galway Women's Football Club as a CEO, it's a game-changing appointment. I really would like to think, and there's some really exceptional coaches working in the Women's National League, and there's a lot of work being done, but I really do think there's so much potential. For me, I don't know how people perceive it on the outside, where I'm best placed, whether that's in the men's game or the women's game. For me, it's about the team that I'm with and how can I create a winning team in the environment that we're in. And that for me is, it doesn't matter whether it's men's or women's football, because you're still trying to create a team that wins. And I would always bring all of my expertise and all of my experiences over the last 12 to 13 years to whichever role I was in. But right now, the only opportunities for me as a female coach to be a professional female coach is in the men's game in this country.
And as you say, even then, to get a full-time job as a coach is a very difficult thing in League of Ireland football. And you do have some other interests. You've been a regular on our TV screens over the last year or so as a pundit, covering the European Championship, covering Champions League games. I mentioned Karen Carney was on. We saw what happened to Karen Carney in the UK last year around Leeds United and some of the pretty sickening abuse that she received. How have you found it? How have you found being on television covering these big games and the sort of reaction you've got?
Yeah, it's a bit daunting. It's a bit different answering the questions to asking them, that's for sure. But no, it's been a brilliant experience. It's something I've really enjoyed. You're getting to watch football and talk about it. And it's been lovely. I think there's been a really positive, I've certainly got a lot of really positive feedback. People have welcomed and seeing a female. And I think, you know, probably when I started off doing it a couple of years ago, when I did the Women's World Cup in 2019, there was no real comment as to whether you were male or female. But as soon as I started doing men's Champions League games or men's Republic of Ireland games, straight away people are going, well, why would you have a woman on talking about men's football? Even though my whole career in management and coaching has been pretty much in men's football. So straight away you're judged just because you're a female, even though you work in the men's game and at the highest levels of the men's game. People still had that lens through which they would see you. But what I've loved the most over the last 2 years is that it's normalizing. You know, you have the likes of Karen Duggan, Anya O'Gorman, Steph Roach, all these other females that have been on the TV screens. And it is starting to normalize, and kids at home don't differentiate so much between whether it's a woman or a man, given their analysis and their thoughts on the game. I think once you can deliver stuff that people can relate to and that, you know, there's a bit of quality in your content, I think that's the most important piece. I don't think it shouldn't matter whether you're a male or female delivering that content. And my hope is that, you know, over time that the conversation shifts away from whether you're male or female, and it's just whether or not you bring something valuable to the conversation that you're involved in. And I think it is changing. I think, you know, some of us have certainly had to have thick skins over the last 2 years, but it's worth it. It's absolutely worth it to change that landscape and to make it easier for the people who come next, and that we normalize it, and that women can be seen as bringing value to sport, whether that's as a player, a coach, a manager, a pundit, a panelist, an analyst, a board member, an administrator, whatever it is, an executive, no matter what level of the game it is, that females have a lot to contribute. And it's not that we're trying to overtake men or anything like that. It's about what can we bring and add to the game and add to the different conversations, different lenses, different viewpoints, different experiences, and that we make the whole football experience a better experience for more and more people. Because in this country, we need to make football appeal to everybody and improve it. And that's the challenge for us at this time, because, you know, whether people like it or not, the game is for everybody. It's not just for guys. And I really do believe that women have a lot to contribute, both to the men's game and to the women's.
Well, you're certainly contributing a lot at the moment, Lisa, I think it's fair to say. Very best of luck with the rest of this season at Galway United. Hopefully you get promotion and you're back up in the Premier Division next season. No pressure.
Thanks a million.
Great to talk to you as always. Lisa Fallon joining us in association with Cadbury FC and their club partnerships. You can also check out cadburyfc.com for updates and promotions and giveaways. Cadbury, official snack partner of Chelsea Football Club.